In the latest installment of our collective nightmare, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has once again proven that if there's a line to be crossed, he'll not only cross it but do a little jig on the other side. The Democrats in Texas House tried to play their part in this grand farce by fleeing the state to block Republicans from redrawing congressional maps. But alas, like characters in a tragically predictable sitcom, they returned home with their tails between their legs. Paxton, ever the maestro of chaos and controversy, took this opportunity to celebrate his victory lap around the political circus tent. This is a man who seems to have turned weaponizing his office into an art form. He's got legal battles coming out of every orifice, whether it's trying to expel Democrats from office or arresting them for daring to hide out in Chicago. It's like watching a bad reality show, where you can't change the channel. This isn't just about Texas anymore. Paxton's antics have national implications as he continues his relentless pursuit of partisan warfare under the guise of justice. He's managed to alienate Democrats and even some Republicans, while somehow maintaining support among those who cheer him on like he's some kind of twisted folk hero. And let's not forget his personal life, adding another layer of absurdity. His wife filing for divorce amidst allegations of infidelity, because why not throw some soap opera drama into this already boiling pot? Meanwhile, Senator John Cornyn sits in quiet desperation as Paxton uses tools unavailable to him, like civil arrest warrants to silence critics and force Democrats back into submission. Paxton's track record reads like a dystopian novel. Lawsuits against Obama-era policies left and right, attempts at dismantling healthcare reforms, crusades against immigration policies, and now targeting blue states with cultural battles that make one wonder if we're living in an alternate universe where logic went on permanent vacation. He even filed a lawsuit challenging election results in four battleground states after Trump lost. A move so audacious even the Supreme Court swatted it away without batting an eyelash. Yet here we are, watching him continue these theatrics under Trump's second term, with no sign of stopping. As if voting rights weren't enough fodder for his next act, he's now investigating alleged voter fraud involving non-citizens casting ballots. Because nothing says democracy like chasing shadows when there are real issues demanding attention, we're stuck watching this tragicomedy unfold while Paxton uses every tool at his disposal, not for justice or fairness, but for partisan gain. Welcome to America 2025, where nightmares aren't just dreams, they're policy decisions.
Of Air Canada, the airline that's now giving us a front row seat to the latest episode of First World Problems, Aviation Edition. Folks, we have a real cliffhanger here. Over 10,000 flight attendants on strike, because apparently they got tired of smiling politely while passengers tried to stuff their oversized luggage into the overhead bins. And what do these flight attendants want? A raise and some compensation for when planes are just chilling on the tarmac. I mean, how dare they ask for more money when they're already getting paid in free peanuts and complimentary eye rolls? The Canadian government swoops in like a superhero with a maple leaf cape saying, "Nope, back to work you go." Because nothing says industrial peace like forcing people back into cramped aisles where legroom is as mythical as Bigfoot. But let's talk about the real tragedy here, canceled flights. Yes, folks are stranded at airports without access to overpriced airport coffee and duty-free Toblerone bars. And who will think of the pharmaceuticals left waiting on the tarmac? Somewhere out there is an aspirin bottle, wondering if it'll ever fulfill its destiny. Meanwhile, WestJet's over here rubbing its wings together like an opportunistic sidekick, ready to save the day, or at least capitalize on someone else's misfortune by adding extra flights. It's almost poetic. So what's next? Will Air Canada's services resume quickly enough for us all to complain about something else trivial? Or will this saga drag on longer than your average layover? One thing's certain. In this first world drama, everyone loses except maybe WestJet's bottom line, and those lucky few who get an unexpected staycation courtesy of corporate labor disputes.
Ah, the sweet scent of democracy in action. Nothing says land of the free quite like National Guard troops patrolling the streets of Washington, D.C. at the behest of President Trump, who clearly missed his calling as a city planner with his ambitious vision to, quote, make D.C. safe and beautiful. With governors from West Virginia, South Carolina, and Ohio eagerly dispatching their troops to the Capitol, one can't help but marvel at this latest chapter in our ongoing saga of federal intervention. West Virginia's Governor Patrick Morrisey waxed poetic about his state's contribution to this noble cause, deploying 300 to 400 skilled personnel to protect federal assets and deter crime. It's heartwarming to see such dedication to national beautification efforts, because nothing screams aesthetic improvement like military presence on every corner. South Carolina's governor, Henry McMaster, was quick to reassure his constituents that their troops would be whisked back home should a hurricane dare interrupt this picturesque scene. Meanwhile, Ohio's Governor Mike DeWine dutifully dispatched 150 military police for added security, because what better way to foster public trust than by upping the ante with armed patrols? Of course, Mayor Muriel Bowser had her own thoughts on this grand spectacle. Her succinct commentary on social media reminded us all that American soldiers policing American citizens is just a tad un-American. But who needs democratic norms when you can have uniformed reassurance? And let's not forget Trump's bold initiative against those pesky homeless encampments. In an act of benevolent urban renewal, 25 encampments were removed last week alone. The administration promises shelters or jails for those unwilling to embrace this new era of civic tidiness. Critics might argue this is all part of a thinly veiled power grab or an authoritarian push reminiscent of dystopian fiction. But surely it's just a coincidence that DC has become ground zero for these sweeping changes under Trump's watchful eye. As protesters gather near the White House chanting "Trump must go now," one can't help but appreciate the irony. In a city supposedly plagued by crime, it's clear who's really feeling threatened by whom. The legal drama continues with Washington suing over forced acceptance of an emergency police commissioner, a move temporarily reversed after some courtroom theatrics. Mayor Bowser remains cautiously optimistic about ensuring any federal surge is actually useful for her city while navigating this brave new world where law enforcement comes gift-wrapped from above. So as we witness this unfolding tableau, the deployment announcements, protests, simmering beneath bicycle barricades, we're left wondering what fresh twist awaits us next in our daily dose of dystopia.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdities of life with a side of dry humor. Today, we're diving into an article from CNN titled, "Since February's Oval Office Shouting Match, the two have gone a long way toward repairing their relationship." Ah, diplomacy, the world's most sophisticated game of adult pretend. Picture this. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky walks into the Oval Office, not unlike a contestant on a reality show where the prize is peace. Last time he was there, he got the boot faster than you can say geopolitical tension. But now he's back for another round of diplomatic charades with President Donald Trump. During their last encounter, Trump told Zelensky that he didn't hold the cards, a statement which must have been comforting coming from someone who believes in winning without ever revealing his hand. Now, after Trump's summit with Putin in Alaska, where they presumably bonded over shared interests like global chaos and questionable hairstyles, Zelensky returns to learn what peace means this week. Trump's new strategy? Forget about an immediate ceasefire. Let's jump straight to a full peace agreement while missiles are still flying overhead. It's like trying to plan a wedding in the middle of a food fight. And then there's Putin's demand for Ukraine to hand over land, because nothing says, "Let's be friends," quite like territorial concessions. But fear not, there's hope yet as Trump dangles US security guarantees like a carrot on a stick. Details pending, of course. Meanwhile, European leaders are coaching Zelensky on how to approach Trump. Less confrontation, more gratitude. Because nothing resolves international conflict faster than saying thank you really nicely. As Zelensky prepares for his meeting with Trump and European leaders gather like it's some kind of awkward family reunion, one can't help but wonder, is this all just one big cosmic joke? Are we players in an existential comedy where the punchline is perpetually out of reach? In closing, remember that while world leaders play chess on life's grand stage, or perhaps checkers if we're being honest, we're left contemplating our own roles in this theater of absurdity. And isn't that what makes it all so wonderfully ridiculous?
In the age of unbridled capitalism, data breaches have become just another line item on the profit and loss statement, a mere inconvenience to be settled with a few million dollars tossed into the abyss. AT&T's $177 million settlement for two data breaches is but a drop in their ocean of revenue, a minor hiccup in the relentless march towards maximizing shareholder value. 73 million social security numbers, personal details ripped from the lives of unsuspecting customers, now circulate like currency on the dark web, The company shrugs off responsibility with legalese and settlements, while customers sift through their own digital wreckage for proof of losses that might yield up to $7.500 if they're lucky. Yet even this paltry compensation is shrouded in uncertainty. Victims are left clutching at straws as they navigate bureaucratic mazes designed to exhaust rather than compensate. Meanwhile, AT&T stands defiant, denying culpability with one hand while signing settlement checks with the other. They claim to protect customer data even as it slips through their fingers into the hands of cyber criminals. In this capitalist fever dream, accountability is an illusion, a mirage conjured by public relations teams to pacify the masses. The system churns on, fueled by consumer trust that is exploited until it's shattered. Companies play a cynical game where customer information becomes collateral damage in their pursuit of profits. Settlements serve not as justice, but as calculated business expenses, mere speed bumps on the highway of corporate greed. Here lies yet another symptom of a society teetering on collapse, where privacy is commodified and security sacrificed at the altar of commerce. The cycle continues unabated. Corporations pay off lawsuits while consumers bear the brunt of systemic failures. And so we trudge forward in this dystopian landscape where profit reigns supreme and human dignity is merely an afterthought.